So did anybody actually solve the problem, the asteroid problem, since last time we discussed? Nobody? Okay. So I have to actually solve it? Okay. I was hoping somebody would do it so I don't have to do it myself, but it's a problem. That's job of researchers to solve is to solve hard problems. Is the problems are already solved or they're not very interesting? Okay, so should we wait for Safsan or Mike? Does anybody know anything about either of them?
I saw Michael earlier and he said he was coming.
Mm-hmm. Let me just turn off my... Okay, so the plan, so my plan is basically to try to finish the discussion of linear waves and plasmas today. Although that might be a little bit too optimistic, but if I was according to a schedule, I would be able to do that if I was on a schedule. And the next thing is to add magnetic fields to the mix, which have been, but we have been ignoring it for the most part until now. Okay, so before we continue, so let me remind you what we were doing. So we started talking about propagation of linear waves in collisionless plasma, so ignoring collisional effects. And we were using the Boltzmann equation plus Maxwell's equations to do this, right? So the crucial definition, so we managed to, assuming that there is no background magnetic field, either we could ignore it in the background or it's not there in the background. We just ignored the magnetic field and we had the linearized Boltzmann equation, which is, so let's just remind ourselves. So we have, this is the Boltzmann equation. Df by dt plus so Chiamaka, I assume you've watched all the lectures online? Yes, okay, good. Plus E, or let's say I need to have Q here somewhere. So I want to do it for electrons here. First for protons, you know how this changes. The charge would be different. So this is just for electrons. And, hey, Mike. And the reason I'm going to do it for electrons now is electrons are lighter. As we discussed, they move more easily. So as long as you're interested in high frequencies, electrons are more important than protons because they move much more easily and much faster, basically. Okay. And then this is the force times df by dp equals zero. This is collisionless Boltzmann equation. So we're interested in linear perturbations. So f is f bar of p plus delta f. And we go to the Fourier space. So so this is delta f of x and p and t. But then this is the real space. In Fourier space, I do a Fourier transform, so this would be a function of k. You get delta f hat of omega and k. Right. And of course, p as well. Right. So the Fourier transform is in a space and time, but the momentum dependence is still there. And the same is true for electric field. So the main idea is that these terms are linear in F. So in Fourier space, you just get minus I omega. So the idea is that this is proportional to integral e to the I k dot x, or this is equal to e to the I k dot x minus I omega t times delta F hat. This is delta F hat. So if I take the time derivative, this is omega t. I get a minus I omega. If I get the spatial derivative or spatial gradient, I get an IK. So this is just minus I omega. plus ik dot v times delta f hat, right? So this is just linear. Here, there could be nonlinear terms. Assuming that the electric field vanishes in the background, electric field that you get is first order. So if you just write a linear as the equations, you just keep this to zeroth order, which is just df bar by dp. Right. So it's minus ee hat, and this is in the Fourier space now, dot df bar by dp, which is now just a function of p. Now, f is a scalar, but it's gradient, because p is the vector. This is the vector. So this is a vector inner product, right? So this is incredibly, although this equation is in general complicated in six dimensions, for linearized equations, assuming that there is no background electric field, it's actually incredibly easy to solve this. Just delta f hat is e hat. The df bar by dp, and in the background, if it's isotropic, gradient of this df bar by dp is just in the direction of p, right? So I can just write this e hat dot p if I want. So let me just write it in this original form, df by dp, df bar by dp, divided by, just make sure it's ik dot v minus omega. But the thing to have in mind is just df bar by dp is just equal to p divided by absolute value of p. So this is the vector, but I can write it as a scalar. Right. Hello. The point is that this gradient, because this is just a function of magnitude of p, it's just going to be in the direction of p vector times the scalar derivative. Okay, so this is the solution. The only thing I don't know here is e hat. So this would be a full solution to Boltzmann equation, except that I don't know what the electric field is. But I can get that from where? Where can I get the electric field from? Anybody? What is that? From Maxwell's equation. Good, yes. Maxwell's equation relates electric field to the charge density, right? So just to be really consistent, this is the Maxwell equation in CGS units. It's rho, charge density. And you could also write it as minus divergence of polarization. This is polarization vector. This is basically the definition of the polarization vector in some sense. So polarization vector is how much the charges move times the charge. And this is minus E integral of delta F d3 p, right? So it's just the change in the density times electric charge. And there's a minus sign because we're talking about electrons here. So this is divergence of E in the Fourier space. And I guess one more thing I should mention is, I guess I'm not going to use it here, am I? The other equation is J equals partial P by partial T equals minus E integral of V delta F d3P. So this is just the definition of current, right? But I'm not here. I'm not going to use it because I don't care about current. All I care about is electric field. If I wanted a magnetic field, then this one would also be important. So in Fourier space, I can take this to Fourier space using the same trick: replace gradient by ik. So I get. Let's just do it here. I get I k dot p hat These are functions of omega and k. This is equal to minus, let's see, okay, so this is equal to minus E S squared integral df naught by dp dot E hat d3p divided by I k dot v minus omega. So what I did here is use this to combine this equation and this equation, right? So I plugged from delta f here to the right-hand side here, and went in the Fourier space. So first you Fourier transform this. So instead of minus divergence of p, you get ik dot p hat, and I'm not 100% sure about all the minus signs here. See, in principle, I think I shouldn't have a minus sign, should I? Okay, I think I shouldn't have a minus sign here, but I'm not 100% sure. I think there must be a mistake in the notes then, the way I've written it. Because assuming that this convention is correct, I think divergence of E is 4 pi rho. Rho is minus the divergence of P. Right, because minus divergence of displacement is the density. And then density is just minus E integral of delta F. Right. I think these are all correct. Okay. And any questions?
So F naught is the same as F bar?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, F naught is, I think in my notes I call it F naught. This is F bar, really. This is the same thing that I had up here. Okay, so from this I can read off epsilon, and remember the definition of epsilon, which gives you the dispersion relation, is epsilon times E is E plus, this is the displacement, or I guess I don't even remember what these things were called. I think this is called displacement. I don't remember, but P is polarization vector, I guess. That's what it's called. So these are the definitions, right? 4 pi and P. And P, I have it from here. So from this, I can plug in there and get the epsilon. So epsilon minus 1 times E is 4 pi. And I can multiply this by k. So remember now, epsilon has two different components. There's a longitudinal one and a transverse one, right? And the difference was, should I write it again? Right, so epsilon is a tensor. And but then it depends on omega and k. Remember, it's a function of omega and k. But k is a vector. So you can decompose it in terms of eigenvalues, and it has different eigenvalues along the direction of k and perpendicular to the direction of k. Here, I only care about this equation only tells me about the eigenvalues along the direction of k, because I only have k dot p hat here, right? So if I multiply by k here, which gives me that equation on the left, that equation that I have here, then I get epsilon l minus 1 k hat or k dot e hat. This is now in Fourier space. Is 4 pi it's minus 4 pi I E squared integral of df bar by dp dot e hat, and then there is the d3p divided by k dot v minus omega. Okay, so I have an I in denominator. Should I have an I in denominator or numerator? Where should the I be? There's an I here as well. There was an I here. There's an I there. The minus sign came from, because there was an I on the left-hand side, I put it, taking the right-hand side, it gives me minus I, minus 4 pi I e squared. And that's all there is, right? Sure.
We are in space.
So right.
We have F and P.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have Fourier transform to X. So we get another variable for the momentum that's K. This is the quantity value variable for X.
For X, that's right.
And there shouldn't be a relationship between K and P?
No. Okay, so that's a good question. So here P is momentum of individual particles. And K is wave number of the coherent oscillations, right? So the analog of that is, I mean, in this room, they have sound waves. So sound waves are collective motions of atoms and molecules, right? Molecules of air. So there is a wavelength for the sound waves that you hear. I guess it's like how many centimeters, or 10 centimeters or something like that. So that's of that order. That's that wavelength. 2 pi divided by that is a wave number. But of course, the momentum of individual particles is much larger. So what is the de Broglie wavelength of? That must be tiny, right? Because we can deal with them as classical or treat them as classical particles. So, right. I guess I can. Let's just do an estimate on the side. So if you have. That's right, exactly. The wavelength of the coherent oscillations. Like if you want to calculate K, so from the de Broglie relationship, we have P equals H bar K, right? So if you want to ask what is the momentum of an atom or a molecule in this room, so this is the mass times the velocity, right? So if you want to ask what is the wave number of an atom, it's just M divided by H bar times the velocity. If it's a thermal atom, this would be something like m divided by h bar, a square root of kt divided by m, which is, I guess, a square root of ktm divided by h bar, right? So, I guess this is Boltzmann constant. So if I plug in numbers, so what are the numbers for this? What is the Boltzmann constant? 10 to the minus. No, it's 10 to minus 16, right? In CGS units. I think so. It's 10 to the minus 16. Temperature in this room is 300. Let's say 100 is 10 to the 2. The mass of an atom, it's or molecule. So let's say oxygen, it's so 32 times the mass of, so it's 10 to the minus 24 is the mass of a proton. In CGS units, let's say times 10. And H bar is 10 to the minus 27. 27. Okay, so let's see what we get. So it's minus 16 minus 24 is minus 30 minus 42. Plus 3 is 10 to the minus 39. A square root is something 10 to the minus. Let's say 10 to the minus 4, 10 to the minus 20 roughly, 10 to the minus 27, just 10 to the 7. Right. So that's 10 to the minus 7 centimeter is the de Broglie wavelength of a thermal molecule. But of course, the wavelength of sound waves is something over 10 centimeters. So they're much smaller. Okay. Which is basically the classical approximation that you deal with this at classical particles. You can then start to worry that if this k becomes comparable to that for very short wavelength fluctuations, then you cannot trust classical physics, right? Good, good question. So this is this equation. It can be solved, right? How can it be solved, or is it already solved? So if you only have electric field along the direction of if you just have a longitudinal electric field, now let's see, is it obvious to solve this thing? I'm a little bit confused now. There's k dot e hat here, and there is e hat here. So let's say that there is only electric field along the direction, say e hat is proportional to k, right? So, okay, then, right, so let's just look at the longitudinal one. So e hat is just proportional to k. Then I can replace e hat by k hat, or k times k dot e hat divided by absolute value of k, let's say a squared, right? And then this k dot e hat cancel from the two sides if e is proportional to k. And in that case, then I get epsilon. Epsilon L is just 1 plus, plus or minus. Here in the notes I have minus. Here, I guess it's minus, right? I guess the notes are correct. Minus 4 pi e squared divided by k squared, integral of k dot df bar by dp. E3p divided by k dot v minus omega. Mm-hmm. Okay. So this is just for longitudinal epsilon. The transverse one, let's see, is it obvious what happens to the transverse one? I think that so the transverse one, something funny happens with it. Okay, so I don't have the notes with the transverse one, but it's going to be very similar with some slight differences that I'm going to mention. I'm missing something here. Wait. Yeah. Okay, so I don't have the notes for the transverse one, but I think it's just it shouldn't be very different from what I have here. Right now, I'm a bit kind of blacking out on exactly how it should go. Okay, so what's the interesting thing about this? So there is this denominator that I mentioned to you last time as well that vanishes at some point. And that happens where phase velocity of your linear perturbations becomes comparable to the velocity of particles. Because this v is the velocity of particles in your gas, or in your, in this case, in your plasma. This is the velocity of electrons. And here we're integrating over all the velocities. This is an integral over the Maxwell distribution, right? This f bar. As I mentioned, this is e to the minus p squared over 2m, right? Or it's proportional to this. So you're integrating over the Maxwell distribution, but at some point this denominator vanishes. Okay. So we have to do something about that. And when you do that, then this is all you need, right? So if you do this integral, and somehow regularize that singularity that happens where this denominator goes to zero, then that gives you epsilon. That's your dispersion relationship, right? Dispersion relationship, if you remember, tells you how fast waves propagate. So the way it worked was basically omega squared is C squared K squared divided by epsilon, or epsilon times omega squared, C squared times K squared. Just make sure this is correct. Is that correct? Right, that's right, yeah. So you have an effective speed of propagation, which is a speed of light divided by epsilon. If you have epsilon, you just plug it into Maxwell's equation, and that you get a speed of propagation. Right. I'm a little bit confused about this right now. Is that correct? Does everybody agree with this? So, how do we see this? So, do you remember how you get? Right, I have to remember this. This is like elementary electromagnetism.
What's the question again?
So how you get this relationship? How does epsilon affects the speed of propagation, the wave equation? So this is just a saying that like the speed of light, say in water is less than a speed of light in water is less than a speed of light in air. Less than a vacuum, just because there's a vacuum polarizability, affects epsilon, and that's how it comes in. Okay, so let's not talk about that for a second. Let me just I'm going to get to it, and I guess I think I can follow the notes and see how it works out. So what's the idea? So let's first try to figure out what this term is. And this term in principle, as I said, is just an integral. You have to plug that in here, plug this Maxwellian distribution in here, and that gives you a result, and that's your epsilon. So that basically that means, or epsilon minus one tells you if you have an electric field that's oscillating with some frequency, how does it polarize your medium, okay? The problem, of course, is that there's this zero, and you have to regularize it, otherwise it gives you infinity. So the way it's done is by a trick, and so physically, let me just tell you what it means. As I said, so there's a wave that's moving. If there's omega and k, the wave is moving at velocity omega over k, the phase velocity, right? And then you have particles or electrons that are moving in all directions, right? But there are some electrons that are moving the exact same velocity. And those guys, the guys that are exactly moving with this, they can suck energy. So that's basically the physical meaning of this guy. That most electrons, this wave just passes through them, and on average, it doesn't have any effect. But the electrons that are exactly moving with the wave, they basically electron could be the wave could actually do work, exert or perform work on it, and they can suck energy out of the wave. So that's the physical meaning of this guy, this divergence. Another way is. See, is that if there is a tiny electric field, that's enough to excite a lot of perturbations in these electrons that are exactly moving with the wave. So let's say, I guess it's the one way to think about it is that in the frame that's moving with this wave, electrons that are exactly moving at the same velocity, if you wait long enough, they're going to be basically affected infinitely by this wave, right? So it's like saying that you have some potential well, and you have an electron somewhere, the electron is just going to fall. No matter how small the amplitude of the potential well is. If you have infinite time, the electron or particle is going to just fall down. And the same is fall down through it. And that's the thing. The most electrons, these wells just pass through them, have very little effect, except for the electrons that are moving exactly with it. And then basically, the effect is going to grow with time. So of course, it cannot grow indefinitely. And the reason it cannot grow indefinitely is this plane wave isn't infinite. Right? There is a finite size to the plane wave. In reality, there is nothing that has infinite size. And the way to capture that is to think about you're slowly turning on this plane wave. Okay? So the way we do it is to say, instead of this e to the ik dot x minus omega t that we had up here, your amplitudes, let's say your e hat, your electric field, is proportional to e to the ik dot x, let's see, minus omega t plus lambda t, where lambda goes to zero, the small but positive number. So here, basically, it's saying that your wave hasn't been there forever. It's been slowly turned on over time. So since positive at t goes to negative infinity, this amplitude goes to zero. Okay. So it's just saying that this is a more realistic situation, that you don't have plane waves that exist forever. They always turn on at some finite time. Okay. So what does it do? So this is like giving an imaginary part to the frequency. So omega, in fact, this what it does is that instead of omega, you have omega minus, let's see, omega minus or plus I lambda, right? Because if I put, instead of omega, I put omega plus I lambda here. Then there's minus I times plus I gives you 1. So they get a lambda t here. So these two are equivalent to each other. So if I do this, so this actually can be used to regulate this this integral. Because now that you integrate over momenta, because velocities are always real, but this omega has a small imaginary part. This never exactly vanishes, right? The denominator is always non-zero. So you may wonder that you still might have trouble regulating this. But it turns out that with this regularization, you can actually take the limit of lambda going to zero, and this integral is well defined. And the reason for that is there is this interesting identity, which you might have come across in quantum mechanics. So 1 over x minus I lambda. Of course, it's trivial. You can write it x plus I lambda divided by x squared plus lambda squared. I'm just multiplying numerator and denominator by x plus I lambda, right? So then this gives me, so there's a real term, x plus x divided by x squared plus lambda squared. And there is an imaginary term, so purely real and purely imaginary term. Okay. And you can show that this actually goes in the limit of lambda going to zero from the positive side. This goes to principal part of 1 over x. Called principal part or principal value, I don't remember. Plus I pi delta, this is Dirac delta of x. So principal part of 1 over x is basically like saying this is a real function. So you know 1 over x is negative at negative values of x. And then it's positive for positive value of x. The principal part is that you just exclude minus epsilon to plus epsilon region around zero. And you notice that, I mean, you may think that's a problem, that might be a problematic because, I mean, this is going to infinity, but since it's exactly symmetric, if this multiplies a smooth function, the negative infinity and positive infinity cancel each other, so this is a well-defined limit. So it's just basically like just taking this guy and exclude a symmetric region around zero. That's what it is. So you just exclude from minus epsilon, let's say, to plus epsilon here. And it's real. Now, the non-trivial part is this extra term, which is not real, is imaginary. And the physical interpretation has to do with the fact that it's the modes haven't existed forever. They actually have been turned on at a finite time, right? And that gives you an imaginary part, and that gives you an imaginary part for epsilon, okay? So that's basically the trick, is that if you use this, then you just get a minus I lambda, or I guess it's minus I lambda here, right? Where lambda is a small number. And that regulates this integral. What it does is that, so you get a real part, which is just excluding the region around zero, a symmetric way, and you get an imaginary part in the limit that lambda goes to zero. And that's responsible for dissipation, which basically means that the sound waves, and this epsilon, this, we're talking about longitudinal fluctuations, so these are sound waves in electrons. So the sound waves in electrons lose their energy to thermal electrons, right, over time.
So that term, the I lambda term we got, means that this wave dissipates?
That's right. So the I lambda, the implication of this the fact that there's an imaginary part, that means that these waves dissipate. And let me...
So it's basically the same trick that we do QFT.
I mean, this comes in QFT as well. And right, exactly. So in QFT, there's a Green's function that looks like this. It's like omega squared minus k squared. And then you have to, since it goes to zero at some point, it has a singularity, you have to regulate it, and regulating it is equivalent to setting the boundary conditions. So the boundary condition, for example, this is the same as retarded boundary conditions, because here we're saying that the modes didn't exist in the past, it kind of turned on at some point, right? Of course, I mean, there are differences. In QFT, this quadratic, omega squared minus k squared, this is linear here. So there are some obvious differences. I think there are limits that are more similar to QFT. In a sense, this is more general than quantum field theory because you have this additional momentum dependence. So there's additional structure in the problem. So for thermal so up to this point, everything was general for any background distribution. If you assume it's thermal, then you could actually do these integrals. At least, I mean, this is a Maxwellian integral, so a Gaussian integral. Generally, you cannot do it, but you can do it in the limits of thermal velocities being very large or very small. And that's how it looks like. So epsilon L is 1 minus omega p squared divided by omega squared. So this is a limit of omega over k being much bigger than Ve. This is Ve is just a square root of kt. Stop. Kbt over me. So this is the thermal velocity of electrons. So this is the limit where there's very few of these electrons where that can actually move with the photon, sorry, with the phonon or with the sound wave, because but I guess these are not, I shouldn't call these sound waves. I think I could have called plasmon waves, because these are basically plasma These are not sound waves. Everything moves together. Ions and electrons move together. Here, they're just electrons that are moving. So these aren't sound waves per se. These are like sound waves of electrons only. OK, so in this limit, you get this epsilon L is 1 minus omega p squared over omega squared, 1 plus 3 k squared Ve divided by omega squared plus I squared of pi over 2 omega squared omega p squared over k Ve cubed. E to the minus omega squared over 2k squared Ve squared. Okay. So this is for very cold electrons. So and you see that for very cold electrons, this omega over k is much bigger than Ve, the thermal velocity. This is exponentially suppressed, which basically says that there are very few electrons that actually move with the wave. So this is the lambda damping terms, this imaginary part. This is the real part. And let me see that I've got everything here. Right, so this is the real part. And so we're going to talk about the limits here in a second. And in the case of very hot electrons, omega over k much less than Ve, which is, I guess, the same thing. Here, I think Ve is exactly, actually, I think I defined Ve as kT over m. No, I don't have it right. This is defined as exactly kT over m. Then epsilon L will be 1 minus omega p squared divided by k Ve squared. And then there is 1 minus omega over k Ve squared plus I squared of pi over 2 omega over k Ve. So here, there are lots of thermal velocity of electrons is big. So there are lots of electrons that actually move, could actually satisfy this denominator being equal to 0. So there is no exponential suppression here. Omega p is what? Anybody remembers? What is omega? Plasma frequency, OK. So what is it? Omega p squared was 4 pi. And E squared divided by ME, right? Okay, and for cold plasmas, you get if the temperature goes to 0, that would be this one. This guy goes to 0. This guy goes to 0. So you just get epsilon is 1 minus omega p. OK, so I have a note here that epsilon t is the same, or I guess a similar expression. So similar expression for epsilon t for transverse t, but without the Landau damping term, without these imaginary parts. So is this obvious why there isn't any, if you don't have any transfers? So these are things that we have to be able to understand. This should be easy to understand this. If there is no, for transverse fluctuations, if electric field is perpendicular to k, then the idea is that this never vanishes, or there is no imaginary part. So is this? Can we see how that happens? Can we stare at these equations and see if electric field is if electric field is perpendicular to K, then Landau damping is zero. Does anybody see it? Those of you who are not asleep? That's okay. So, so lambda damping is, are these imaginary parts? Okay, so there are two things that I wanna see here. One is, so basically the idea of lambda damping is damping, that the modes lose energy as they propagate through the medium. So that means that if omega is real, K would have an imaginary part. If K is real, omega would have an imaginary part. The modes would damp. So that's the idea, but that only happens for longitudinal, that only happens for longitudinal waves if E is along K, if K dot E is non-vanishing. If K dot E is vanishing, that doesn't happen. And can we see that here? So I'm just asking you, can we just look at this equation and see if K is perpendicular to E, then this denominator never vanishes. Can we?
Well, K is perpendicular to E, then shouldn't E be perpendicular to K?
Well, the thing about V is we are integrating over all V's here, right? So this is integrated. P is MV, right?
If you have an electric field, won't you make all the velocities go in the direction of the electric field?
No, but this is in, like, you'll affect the velocities, but this is integrating over all velocities.
Right, so, okay, so how does this look like? So how this looks like is in the space of momenta, this guy here. So you have like px, py, pz, the momenta or velocities, they are proportional to each other. You have a k vector and you have an e vector. So k vector in some direction is in this some direction. And E is perpendicular to that, but if you're talking about transfers, right? This is E, these are perpendicular. And we're doing this integral, okay? So when omega, when K dot V equals omega, then this vanishes, this denominator vanishes. So that would be somewhere along this, I think I will be somewhere along here, right? Because basically what it says is that if you project velocity in the direction of K, so velocity is some vector, if you project it in the direction of K, it should be equal to omega, it's some fixed omega. There would be a plane. There would be a plane perpendicular to K, right? There would be a plane that's perpendicular to K, okay? But if E is perpendicular to K as well, then what does it mean is that they don't actually, they never intersect each other, right? So what it means is, right, I think what it means is basically this always, this integral, well, anywhere in this plane, if you just integrate over the regions that for which this vanishes, right? So, So the point is that this thing is symmetric. Everything in here is symmetric under rotation around k, okay? But if you multiply by e hat, it becomes anti-symmetric, right? So this would be an odd function, basically, and it would be zero. If its integral would be zero. Does that make sense?
So it's an odd function that you're integrating over all space.
Right, so you're integrating over all momenta, right? Yeah. So the point is that E has two components. If it's parallel to K, then you get what we got up down there. It's a scalar. But if it's perpendicular to K, you see because of the symmetry, everything except for this E hat vector is symmetric under rotation around K. All right? But then if I multiply by E hat, it basically changes things by, turns monopoles to dipoles, basically. It breaks the symmetry. And so this integral should be zero. I don't know. I don't know how clear it is, but at least it's not clear to me. I'm not sure if I can clearly explain it. So this integral, except for this E hat guy, this integral is, right, actually, that's another way of putting it. So is this E hat, I can bring it out of integral, right? So if I do this integral, it could only be in the direction of K because of the symmetry. But then E hat is perpendicular to K. So this guy, this integral, this should be E hat dot something that's proportional to K hat, some proportional to K. Because K is the only vector that exists in here. Right. But then E hat is perpendicular to that, so that's zero. Okay, so that's the main thing. So right.
So we would expect F bar, the vector gradient of F bar in terms of P to be parallel to K?
Well, it wouldn't be parallel to K, no. So this would be just in the direction of P, but you're integrating over all the P, all P's, right? And F bar is spherically symmetric, right? F bar is just a spherically symmetric. So after you integrate over all p's, you have to get a vector, right? Because this is a vector. But the only thing it could be proportional to is k, because there is no other vector left, right? After you integrate over all p's.
Yeah.
So it would be proportional to k, but then if e is perpendicular to k, then this dot product would be zero. Right? OK, so that's good. That's a good question. How are we going to get something similar? Right. So P would be zero. Right. So this. So P would be zero. So let's see. How are we going
to? Maybe it has to do with.
Right. We're going to get ik dot p hat equal to zero. So that should give you epsilon equal to one. Right. So what am I missing here? Good question. Right. So that I don't know. That's a good question. I think I'm missing something here. But it seems that the whole integral would be zero, wouldn't it?
So that would mean K and P, the polarization vector, are perpendicular.
Right. Well, if I have just transverse electric fields, if E hat is perpendicular to K, this thing would be zero altogether, wouldn't it? Unless I'm missing something. I think it would be zero altogether. Pretty sure, yeah. So that means that there is no polarization. Okay, so it just says gives you zero equal to zero, right? Because this, it just means you cannot use this equation because k dot e hat is zero, right hand side is zero, so all is zero.
But
yeah. So, you have to use another equation, I think, which is, which equation was it? I think maybe one that we had somewhere. Yeah, this one, this equation I think you have to use, right?
So you'd expect all the current to be in the direction of K as well.
Yeah. Okay, so let me look into this. I didn't write down the notes for the transfers. That's why I'm a bit confused about them. Okay, I can tell you what the result is going to be, and then I'm going to look into this and figure out how to get it. So you're going to the similar, you're getting something similar, and right. So I guess the point is, So you're going to get, so what are you going to get? So you're going to get in the limit of V omega for the cold plasma. Where basically that limit omega over K is much bigger than VE. Both epsilon transverse and longitudinal are going to be 1 minus omega P squared over omega squared. Right. And for transverse modes, did I need this? Let's just go there. So that's just the limit of omega VE going to zero. And this is the result that we had before, right? Kind of the result that we had before. We found that this is how we got the plasma frequency. So the plasma frequency was that if you just have a plane wave, then its frequency would be omega p. But there we're ignoring the pressure terms. So these are essentially the pressure terms. So this is some damping effect that, I guess it goes to zero in the limit of cold plasma, and this is pressure term. This is just a sound wave for electrons. So in general, if you include the corrections, then what you get is, so let's just do this for trans. So let me just, I know it's a little bit confusing, and I'm confused as well, but let me just write down these implications. And then we can go back and think about, well, I'm not feeling very comfortable with this.
Might have this wrong, but that equation is related to the critical angle for plasmas, right? Like for a given frequency.
This equation.
Yeah.
Right. So
I think it's related to the square root of it, and so when it's greater than one. Or when it's negative, you'll never get a critical angle, so you'll never get the like total internal effect within, say, like Earth's atmosphere and the ionosphere.
Right. So now I was gonna get to that. So that's what we discussed before, but I was gonna get to that. So for longitudinal. Okay. So let's discuss the longitudinal modes first. So for longitudinal modes. What you get is you want divergence of epsilon E to be zero, right? That's Gauss's law. Okay. And what does that mean? I have it somewhere. So epsilon L is this guy. So this should be zero, right? Right. So it means that omega squared should be equal to omega p squared times 1 plus 3k squared VE. Omega squared plus I squared of pi over 2. I'm not gonna Shall I write everything here? I have also a Landau damping rate here. Well, okay, so it's just that omega squared omega p squared by kV cubed e to the minus I squared divided by 2k squared V squared. Okay, so if VE goes to zero, this goes to zero, this goes to zero, just as omega squared is omega p squared. That's exactly what you said. The first term, the first correction term, so omega is approximately omega p. The first correction term, I can just replace this omega by omega p. And I don't know how reasonable that is, but I guess that's what it is. So it just gives me omega squared is omega p squared plus 3 VE. These guys cancel. And I think there must be a squared somewhere because... because dimensions don't match there, do they? Yeah, I think it must be VE squared. Right, that's what I have in the exponential term. So this at least dimensionally now makes sense because omega over k is velocity. So maybe I have a typo here. I do tend to erase things. I think it's a square. Yeah, it must be a square. Otherwise, the dimensions don't work out. So it's this term. And then there is a Landau damping term that's, I think I have a way of writing it, although I'm not 100% sure whether I've written it correctly. Yeah, so plus I something. So I guess my point is that this is just a sine wave, right? This is just CS squared for electrons, right? For electrons, so it just says that you have omega is omega p squared plus this small corrections that due to sine waves. And so your these plasmon waves, if you will, it's like massive particles, right? They have mass of omega p and the speed of propagation of CS, or the maximum speed of propagation of CS. Of course, this you cannot go to very high frequencies, or actually, no, this does. Am I missing something? You can go to very high frequencies. You know, you can go to very high frequencies. Right. So what happens if you go to very high? I think you can extend this to very, very large omegas. I don't see anything breaking down here.
Would dampening just dissipate?
No, I mean, if omega is much bigger than k, this thing goes to zero, right? Right. Right, right. So what am I missing here? Omega squared. Did I do everything right here? There is an omega squared. This would be omega to the fourth here, right? Maybe there's a minus sign here as well. So all I did is multiply this by omega squared and then take everything to the right-hand side except for omega squared. So that's this equation. So if VE goes to zero, then right. If VE goes to zero, then omega should be just omega p. I think this is all correct. Okay. So,
does it say that the dimensions should be measured by the dimensionless?
These are all dimensionless, right? Because this is one, so this should be dimensionless, and so this should be dimensionless as well. Is it dimensionless? It's not dimensionless?
It's omega 4 over.
Right. Kv, k cubed. So what is, obviously I'm missing more things here. So what is it that I'm missing?
By the looks of it, it probably should be a 4 there.
Yes.
Yeah. Since omega squared k squared.
Okay, so there is no square here. I'm not sure why I have a square. There is no square here. Okay, so I think
it's
I just.
Not 4 in
there. So it's not so 4.
Okay, so it's not omega 4,
it's omega cubed.
Omega cubed. Good. Perfect. All's good. Right.
And then in the fourth line, this one, you have 1 minus omega p squared over k. Does that match that?
Oh, yeah. Okay, so this is not the squared.
Yeah.
No, let's see. No, okay. No, this is, gosh, yeah, I guess I'm terrible at in copying things, so. Let's see, so can we figure out based on just, I mean, plausibility arguments, what it should be? so for velocities much smaller than the sound speed, for omega much less than k, if the term of velocity is much bigger than the speed of the particle, speed of the wave, then can I tell what it should be? No, I cannot. So the wave is essentially a standing wave. K goes to 0. Yeah, okay, so I don't know. I mean, if you go, any of you have the textbook, Padmanabhan's textbook, I mean, you can, either it's a typo there, or I made a mistake in
which chapter?
Plasma, linear waves, I guess. So it's a good question. Is omega p divided by k ve? Right, so. Yeah, so anyway, so it's either the second power or fourth power. The details, it's a type of, you could figure out which one it is. But yeah, so dimensionally, this just should be omega p has the same dimension as kve. Okay. So it's either second or fourth power. Good. So longitudinal waves, so we decided. How you get the dispersion relation is just from this equation, divergence of epsilon e is equal to 0. You get this, and it turns out that, so there's a damping as well, which is, so the damping can be written, so I have an expression for damping which looks like this. Gamma is the square root of pi over 8. Omega p divided by k lambda d cubed e to the minus 1 over k lambda d squared minus 3/2. So does this look anything similar to that? I can't tell. Omega. Squared is omega cubed, omega p squared. And lambda d is kt, kbt divided by 4 pi and e squared. So lambda d is basically a v thermal, it's v electron divided by omega plasma. I think it's exactly that. Is that right? Yeah, it's exactly that. It's exactly this. So this minus 3/2, I'm not sure what role it plays there. Just this square root of pi over 8. So this is basically this, right? Yeah, this is basically this. Omega p. Well, let's see. But what is the dimension of gamma? Gamma is the dimension of omega, right?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So, K lambda is dimensionless, so yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I think this all makes sense. This minus 3/2, I think, is some corrections. I'm not sure exactly how that comes out of there. But the rest is, this is essentially this expression. To put it another way, I think, so what that is is, KBE has the right dimension. KBE.
Is that assuming somehow omega is near omega?
So I think omega squared is basically roughly omega p squared plus I gamma or I gamma omega p. Right. So I think this is roughly the definition of. So this is what you mean by the decay rate of a harmonic oscillator, that the frequency has a natural frequency plus some imaginary part. And this is, I think this do match. And the way to do it is, I have to combine, you have to plug in terms of VE in terms of omega p. So VE would be lambda d times omega p. You plug it in here, you get lambda d cubed, omega p cubed. There would be omega p to the fifth up here. So it will be omega p squared. One is here, the other is here. So I think that's what it is. And the numerical factors, I think that's kind of in the definition of, maybe either in the definition of gamma, or maybe I'm missing a term somewhere here. But so basically this is the idea, is that every frequency, so your plasma frequency, there's a natural frequency, which is what we derive, but there is a part due to lambda damping, which looks like this. For very long wavelength, k goes to zero, so it's not there, so it's basically like dissipation. But for short wavelengths, then you can excite thermal electrons, and this is going to be significant. Right. And if k becomes of order lambda d for wavelength comparable to the Debye length, then essentially you don't have plasma frequency. These become comparable to each other. Yes.
That's square.
Okay, this is a square. Perfect. Thanks. Okay. Good. Yes.
So I've seen this technique used several times where you like do the first order and then you plug in first order solutions. Is there a technical name for that?
You mean when I did this and then plug? Well, it's called perturbation theory.
Okay, but like.
Yeah. Right, so this is, I'm a little bit confused by this myself. Right, but so what we do is just saying that you are in this regime that you say omega, so in this regime, we are making this approximation that omega over k is much bigger than VE. So you want to make an expansion in, let's say expansion, in the small parameter, which is VE k divided by omega, right? So to zeroth order, what you do is you set this equal to zero. This is a little bit, this is not analytic, but basically when this goes to infinity, e to the minus infinity, this is zero. So omega is omega p. Okay. So that's to zeroth order. Then to first order, what you do is you have to plug in omega here, but this is already first order because it has a VE in it. So the omega here you can plug into zeroth order, right? So this is just omega p. The same would be true here, right? I mean, this is an analytic, so it's a little bit tricky what you call by first order, zeroth order, because it's not really analytic function. But roughly speaking, it just says omega is approximately omega p, so you can do the same up there as well.
Is there any proof of convergence of this?
Well, right.
Theory is nice. It's like I've never seen this kind of iterative process where you're basically compounding potentially previous assumptions.
Right. Well, I mean, I think the only way to test it is just do it to higher and higher order and see that the corrections are small,
yeah.
Right? So that doesn't prove it. And I mean, there are terms in perturbation theory that are so-called asymptotic series where, they the higher order corrections look small, but then as you go to, very high orders, then they actually start getting big.
Yeah.
So there are obviously counterexamples to that. But yeah, so this is what we often do, and we keep using it until there's a good reason that we cannot. Until it breaks, yeah. Yeah. Okay, good. So, good. So this is all there is to this. And I think that what we learned from this is that you have sound waves in electrons. What happens for very small, very, very long wavelength, if you go to very, very long wavelength, then you have to include protons. You actually have, you don't have sound waves of electrons only, you have sound waves of electron plus proton system. So that happens where, I'm not 100% sure where that happens, but there is a transition scale where you have to, is there an easy way to see? Yeah, you can probably think about it and figure out what is the right scale for that to happen. But at some point where we go to very long wavelength, then it's not okay to just include electrons. You have to include electrons and protons together, even though they are much more massive. So for short enough wavelengths, everything we've done here for sound waves are okay. And what we learned is that if your wavelength becomes comparable to the Debye wavelength, then the wave dissipates very, very quickly because of this Landau damping. But for longer wavelengths, for lambda less than dissipates quickly, wave dissipates quickly. It's quickly. And of course, that's the regime where you don't have an ideal plasma, right? Ideal plasma was, voila. Right, so you don't have, I guess you don't have a neutral plasma, I would say. For lambda much bigger than this, wave propagates basically. Okay, good. So the last thing I'm gonna do is to talk about the transverse waves. And I guess there is, so there is this caveat that I don't have the derivation and I can't exactly recall how to get that transverse waves out of this formalism. Well, I mean, we should be able to do it. We should have to be able to think of on our feet. Let's see whether we can do this. So the idea would be, so what is it that we have to do? I guess that could be more educational to try to think on our feet and see how you get the equation. So how do we get the equation of the propagation or the dispersion relation for light? The way you do it is you have, so there is curl of B equals 4 pi j minus dE by dt. There is a speed of light here. And you take the curl of this, let's say, is 4 pi curl of j minus 1 over c d by dt of curl of e, right? And we have another equation that we can use. Okay, so that's one way to go. There is another one. So what is the other way you can go? And then what is the other maximal equation? Is that curl of E is what? Maybe there's plus. Maybe this one is plus, the other is minus. I don't remember. Let's just put this as minus d by dt of B. And maybe this is plus. I don't remember, but you guys can check which one is correct. Right. So Curl-up A. Okay, let's do it the other way around. Let's take the curl of the top one. That's going to be better. Yeah, that's going to be better. Let's take the curl of the top one. So you get curl of E. Equals minus 1 over C d by dt of curl of B, which is this guy, right? 4 pi j plus 1 over C d by dt of B. Okay? Right. So there is a gradient of divergence of E minus Laplacian of E equals 4 pi over C d by dt of J. And then there's a minus sign, right? And there is minus 1 over C squared d squared of E by dt. Squared. Okay. So in vacuum, what we usually do is you said that there is no charge, divergence of E vanishes, there is no current, so you get the wave equation. So in what we have, that's not the case. So let's see what we should do. So if you have transverse waves, divergence of E still vanish for transverse waves. By definition, right? K dot E should vanish. Dj by dt, however, we still have it. It's the second derivative of P, right, up there by definition. So this is minus 4 pi over C d squared of J, right? So d squared of P. By dt squared minus 1 over c squared, d squared of e dt squared. And you notice this combination is the combination that we had up there as the definition of d, right? E plus 4 pi p, e plus 4 pi p is just d, which is epsilon e. So it's minus 1 over. And I'm missing a C somewhere for some reason. Not 100% sure why.
So it should be D equals to E divided by C plus 4 pi P?
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure where what's happening to the C. I think maybe there's a C up there, maybe there's a C here I'm missing. Right. Here.
And on the second line on the board.
This, yeah.
So there's a 1 over C in front of DE by DT.
There is one here.
Yeah, and so when you multiply by 1 by C,
uh-huh.
There's 1 over C squared.
Right.
Curl
of E. It's minus 1 over C d by dt of curl of B, which is 4 pi g. I did have this 1 over C here. Should be another 1 over C there? I don't think so. But I don't remember this. Well, okay, so I don't remember the definitions of P. Maybe there is a 1 over C in the definition up there. But at the end of the day, what it should come out to be is 1 over C squared d by dt squared of epsilon E. Right? So, and this is epsilon transverse. So what it tells me is that for transverse waves, I get, if I go to the Fourier space, this gives me k squared. This gives you minus this gives me omega squared, or minus k squared minus omega squared. So I get omega squared is epsilon t, or is k squared, c squared, over epsilon t, right? Okay. And now the question is, what is epsilon t now? And I'm going to claim that the epsilon t, you could get it, and it's right. So epsilon t in the limit of cold plasma, I'm claiming it's just 1 over 1 minus omega p squared over omega squared. So if I just plug from there, I get omega squared is k squared c squared divided by 1 minus omega squared over omega p squared. And, omega p squared divided by omega squared. Right. So I can take this to the left-hand side. So I get omega to the fourth is, omega squared, not omega to the fourth. Omega squared equals omega p squared plus k squared c squared. Right? And this is, you can contrast this. This is similar to what we have here. There is no dissipation term. As we argued, the lambda damping doesn't happen. I still haven't shown you that this omega p comes out, but I can't do it right now, but I think it's going to be easy. I just cannot think very clearly right now. So for longitudinal waves, we have the sound speed of electrons. For transverse waves, it's just the speed of light. But when you have plasma, as we argued before, there is a mass term. Right? So this is contrast this to the propagation for a massive particle, which is k squared. E squared is k squared c squared plus ms squared. So ms squared c squared. C to the fourth, plus k squared c squared. Contrast. Or let's say relativistic particle. So this is like a mass of photon now in a plasma. So the photon you think is the massless particle, but it's not if you have plasma frequency. So this is something we talked about before. What it does is it leads to dispersion for photons. Photons of different frequency would move with different speeds. So there's a group velocity. Which is d omega by dk, which is exactly the same for relativistic for a particle. Lower energy particles would move more slowly. So this is C squared, k divided by omega. If you just take the derivative, which is C, 1 minus times 1 minus omega p squared over omega squared, which is, you could write it expanded as the speed of light. It's 1 minus 1 half of omega p squared divided by omega squared plus higher order terms. This is for very high frequency photons.
So is this like a true mass, or is it like an effective mass?
Well, whatever you want to call it. So it's an effective mass because, photon doesn't actually have a mass, but its interaction with the medium gives you a mass. So this is similar to the fact that, this photon is supposed to propagate with the speed of light, but because, like, for example, in air or in water, it propagates slowly. More slowly than that. Now, so the difference here is that just changes the propagation speed. The plasmas, because they have free electrons in them, it gives effectively a mass. It doesn't change. Well, it can change the propagation speed, but that's a different effect. At very low frequencies, basically, the effect is that light cannot propagate. Right. And
so do you get, like, Cherenkov stuff that happens?
In principle, you can if something propagates faster than faster than this. I'm not 100% sure how it works. I'm not familiar with it. That I mean, in principle, if you go something, you have something that propagates. If you have some particle that moves very fast in the plasma, it can emit plasma waves, right? But since this is massive, I'm not 100% sure what it means. Because it's still relativistic in the sense that, you don't propagate, like I can move this chalk very quickly, right? But it doesn't propagate electrons, it doesn't emit electrons, even though, you could have electrons that move slower than this chalk. So the interesting thing about it is that there's still an effective Lorentz symmetry. So changing the speed of propagation breaks the Lorentz symmetry. That's how you can have Cherenkov radiation. This doesn't break Lorentz symmetry. This is still a relativistic.
Okay.
Yeah. So I don't think there's Cherenkov radiation. So I'm sorry this took longer. I think the dispersion measure, some of you have heard about this. And that's just this effect, dispersion measure. So if you have radio waves, if you have a radio pulse, for example, you could have pulsars, like that's what Sausan is presenting her seminar on. This is exactly because of this effect, because higher frequency guys move faster than lower frequency guys. So if you look at the pulse at different frequencies, there would be a dispersion that the higher frequency guys are off faster than the lower frequency guys. And it's proportional to integral of omega p squared, the time that you get, the difference in time of arrival is integral of this cg dt, or delta cg, which is c. There's 1 over 2, and there's delta of 1 over omega squared, and there is integral of omega p squared, and remember omega p squared is, you have it somewhere there, it's there. It's 4 pi e squared divided by me integral of ne dl. So this is how, by observing radio pulsars, you can get the line of sight integral of electron density or surface density of ionized electrons. And the way you do it is basically you compare the time of arrival of different pulses, but pulses at different frequencies, and there will be a difference which goes as, and there's, I guess, a 1 over the speed of light. So this is integral along the line of sight. There's a 1 over the speed of light here. But it's proportional to integral of along the line of sight of omega p squared, which is proportional to the number density of electrons. So if you have more electrons in one direction, then you have more difference in time of arrival of different pulses, pulses at different frequencies. And so this is a very clean way of separating, detecting this effect, because it has this very specific frequency dependence. Okay, so that's it. Sorry, it took a bit longer. And I guess we are basically one lecture behind, it seems, at this point. So, good. Any questions?
Are we going to solve the six sign?
Is it due?
Well, I think it's next week.
Is there? I thought there was a tutorial this week. Maybe you can check. Yeah, my recollection is right that there is a tutorial this week.
Are we solving the fifth assignment or the sixth assignment? We didn't finish the fourth either.
Yes. So fourth, I'm assuming it's finished.
But it's not clearly. We have a tutorial and it says assignment 5 and 6.
Right.
This week?
Yeah.
Okay. So assignment 5 and 6. Right, so assignment 5 we already done because that was due last week. Right. Assignment 6 is what? It's, I forgot what it is.
It's accretion.
Actually, not going to see this. So we're going to do 5 and 6.
Did you see that animation?
I I got the email. Oh, yes, sorry, this is the animation. Yeah, sorry. So, you're asking whether that solved the problem?
No, no. So, it was just, it at least visualizes what Rick was mentioning before.
Right.
Like, triangle.
There's a triangle, right, that's a good point. Okay. So, I'm going to send, yes, there's a nice animation about what Rick was saying. This basically asteroid going between the Lagrange points and.
Well, they had like two clusters of the Lagrange
right.
And then like a triangle.
And there was a triangle
between
them. That was interesting. Yeah. I hadn't seen that. That was interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to try.
That triangle isn't the entire population of the asteroid belt. It's just the ones that are in resonance with Jupiter, I think.
Okay.
So the ones that are resonance happen to be in this triangle.
I think so. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
At least the thing that I was talking. The writing that was accompanying it was basically arguing that this like most of the asteroids are captured
right
by
so it's kind of interesting because so there are two types of some resonances capture asteroids and some resonances actually keep them out so the Kirkwood gaps are the ones that are kicked out
yeah.
And the other ones are the ones that are captured right so but I think your assignment is to for this week for this tutorial we're going to do assignment 5 and 6. And we're going to somehow wrap up assignment 4. I'm not entirely sure how. We're going to wrap it up. Either one of you is going to do it or I'm going to do it. Or the class next year. We'll see.